sleep. What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some ass.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts. Tonight with Emma and Stephen, proudly sponsored this month by our friends from the Dolphin Theatre. Head to dolphintheatre.org.nz to check out their latest shows and book your tickets. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and find us on Spotify. Tonight we have guests from Indian Ink's latest production, Balloon Dog, plus two comedy festival shows are in the house, Big Rice Energy and Wind's Princess. Now it's New Zealand Music Month, so we're playing this week some of the absolute classic Kiwi songs with a couple of new ones in the mix as well. So to kick off the show, here is that very old classic, Nature from The Formula.
I pick my way slowly, talking aloud, eases my mind. Sunlight filters through, I feel my head is bursting, so full of thoughts. I thought, what am I going to do? I need some thoughts that I do, 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 do. So sweetly, nature's own voice I hear, rustling, listening trees, turning breeze to speech. Come to me now, ease my mind, I'll turn something new, mind laden with you. I'll turn something new, mine's laid with you. Do do do.
It's an oldie but a goodie, and 1969 came out, and in the 70s was voted the number one song in New Zealand.
Crazy. I honestly didn't realise it was New Zealand number.
Yeah, there's a couple tonight too that surprised me, so that will be really cool. Mm. Hey, how are you? Haven't seen you for a few weeks. We've been passing like ships in the night with the fabulous Kristen filling in for you or I.
Yeah, and it was fun being back on the other side last week, but I'm back in my, I was going to say my orange mic, but I'm a black mic tonight.
I know, people keep
the
messing around with this.
The socks keep changing.
So you've had another busy time away with shows. Have you had anything happening this week?
No, this week's just been back into rehearsals for everything, because we've got three shows on the go at the moment for Stage Antics with Hadestown, Raise Your Voice, MTI's Broadway Junior Review, and Madagascar. So, yeah, crazy times with three different rehearsals, wow, with three different groups of kids. But it's great.
You managed to whiz down with some theatre friends to Come From Away in Tauranga?
I did. It was so good to see it. Yeah, it was. I just love Come From Away anyway, as you do, but great to be able to go down and support our local Aucklander, Maxwell, was having his alternate night on stage, so it was nice having some support in the audience for him.
Nice. And people still raving about Anne Juliet, but is that, I think that's packed
close
up now?
Close today.
Pack
yeah,
it up.
Yeah, had its
off
last
to Wellington.
Show, and they fly out to Wellington on Tuesday.
Wow. Wow, lots happening, and our inbox is getting full, and you know it's full when I have to message Emma and say, don't book anyone else in for May, because we are overbooked in each show, so which is great. So if you've got something coming up sort of mid-June onwards, you need to email us, info@kickarts.org.nz. Don't wait, because you get no's from us, which we hate sending.
It's amazing how many people email us a week before their show opens, and it's like, can we get on this weekend?
No. But the fabulous team at Elephant are very organised, and they have got our friends from Indian Ink Company back to chat about their current show about to hit, performing in Whangarei, Hamilton, Tauranga and Auckland for Balloon Dog. A big welcome to Jehangir. Did I say that correct?
Jehangir.
Yeah. And Alicia. Great to have you here.
Hello. Very happy to be here.
Very excited.
Very cool. Now, one of you kick it off first of all and just tell us, what is Balloon Dog all about? Before we unpack your roles in Indian Ink, just tell us about the show, Balloon Dog.
Balloon Dog is based on a... Oh, I'm saying a lot of ums, aren't I? Balloon Dog is based on a short story by Rabindranath Tagore, who wrote the short story in the 1800s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a story about a... It's adapted from 1800s to the 21st century, of course.
I was going to say, has it travelled?
It's travelled a little bit. And it's kind of centred around this migrant worker who befriends a child, a five-year-old girl, and a beautiful friendship that comes out about it. And then her grandfather and mother kind of see that there might be something going on. Oh no. And yeah.
And the story unfolds. Translate to modern day for
an
audience?
It does. Yeah. I think there's a lot of connections that connect through a lot of themes that come up around parenthood, just around that kind of classic thing of don't judge a book by its cover. So those sort of themes definitely which translate to today, 100%.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but do you know why Indian Ink chose this show?
I have heard the story where Jacob Uncle read the story, the short story, in front of a bunch of patrons, and their reaction to it was just like, "Huh." And then him and Justin sort of looked at it and were like, "Yeah, wow, this still really translates today." And I think the overall story is just a timeless story.
That's cool. Okay, so who do you both play?
So I play Sarah, who plays the mother in the show, who's got the five-year-old daughter who befriends Kabir.
And I play Kabir, who's the migrant worker.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
I was going to say, is this a, I shouldn't say typical, but typical Indian Ink show with where people playing multiple roles, different things, the use of mask?
The use of mask, definitely. So with the team, Jacob, who plays Ravi, who plays my dad, and then Justin, the director-writer, the question was, what is the smallest possible mask we can have? And it came down to prosthetic teeth.
I was going to say, is it the teeth?
It's the teeth. So that's our kind of the quintessential Indian Ink brand that we're taking forward. But we each play our own characters throughout. But the five-year-old girl in the story is not a real kind of actor.
Okay.
We all kind of take turns to embody her at different parts of the show. So I suppose in that way we're all kind of playing two characters.
Yeah.
And is there music involved in this show as well? Because, you know, Indian Ink's quite often known for having a live person sitting down at the front of the stage in the corner playing.
100%. It's Mr. David Ward again. Mm-hmm. He's playing everything. There's keys involved. He's got some boxing pads making some sound effects. He's throwing a pan on the floor. It's all happening. He's creating a lot, and he's doing things at once with his feet and both his... It's crazy. I don't know how he does it, really.
Did he create that music kind of alongside the rehearsals? So it was kind of devised to suit?
Yeah, 100%. He's come up with the music on his own, and it's sort of, because we've been rehearsing this and creating this for quite a while now, so there's been a real journey, I think, from where we started to where we have now, and the music's been right alongside that as well.
Nice. How long has this journey been? Like, how long have you been rehearsing?
The journey from the start, like, I have auditioned end of 22. So I auditioned for this show and, yeah, I think it was October 2022. So now it's been a little while, but the better half of last year we spent kind of just making it. And unlike a kind of traditional theatre process, we were brought in when the script was still being written. Mm. So every iteration was tested with the actors in the room, and then we'd break, and then Justin and Jake would go away, rewrite, test again. And so that was probably like few months, like five, 6 months.
At least we had at least like 3 2-week blocks, you know, where we'd sit and do stuff. And Murray, the dramaturg as well, would also be there doing stuff with it. So we also had a session where we were just in Justin's house, in his living room, sitting around his table, just talking over the script and going over the script, making cuts, edits, everything. Yeah.
That's quite a commitment. 2022 to 2026, I had to think. When are we? That's a huge commitment. What made you want to be so committed to that?
2022. That's so wrong.
Okay.
2024.
Okay, a little bit closer.
I was like, wait, 2022.
Right, 2 years.
2024.
What's it like being part of a process then like that? That is such a commitment, but you're helping shape something.
It's been really... really nice, I think, to be given that time to breathe and reflect. A lot of the time, you just have to go. We've got the show in 3 weeks, and let's make it. Mm. But, you know, to have that time, yeah, constantly we were like, we're not going on until, you know, ages, so let's take our time, let's really think, let's really look at it from all points of view and everything. So for me, it's been quite relaxing and relieving to have that time to go really deep and dig a lot deeper than maybe probably a bit usual, you know?
Mm-hmm. And also with that, I feel like every option that we could try in terms of performance or staging or costume or whatever, we just had the time to test everything, so we could really like hone in onto what really works because we had that privilege of time. And then also, just as performers, our characters keep getting a deeper sense of the character. Like, we've been with them since 2024, but we're still making discoveries as of, you know, last week's rehearsals. We're still finding out things. So
definitely.
Yeah.
So tell us, what did you know of Indian Ink before this process? Was it something that you knew about?
So this is my professional debut as an actor with Indian Ink, but this is specifically a very special debut for me because Indian Ink was actually my first ever live theatre show that I ever watched in my life.
Was that because of school?
Was it a school showing? Yeah. So it was my drama teacher in school, and she was like, oh, you should go watch the show, Indian Ink. It's coming to the Meteor in Hamilton.
Yeah.
From the Tron, and it was Mrs. Krishnan's party, and they were there, and a friend of mine and I, we both went. I think we were like year 11, maybe, my first show, and I remember seeing that and just being like gobsmacked. I'm like, oh my God. And then obviously I found out more about Indian Ink, and then found out, like, discovered Jacob, and then there was a moment in drama school that Jacob walked in one day across the foyer, and I was just fangirling. I was like, oh my God, I think I like recorded him from like behind a pillar or something. I'm like, that's Jacob Rogers. And to now be like playing his daughter is like really surreal and like quite unbelievable. So yeah, it's like a cosmic opportunity, I feel.
Amazing. What about you, Jay?
I think my first ever memory, I didn't even realize it was an Indian Ink show, but looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, of course it was, because I went, it was my mate's birthday, and he took me to a show, and it was Kiss the Fish, and I just remember thinking, wow, like, how can someone play all these characters, and amazing. And then the more I found out about Jacob's work, I did a show where I had to do a small scene from Krishnan's Dairy as well, and then through that, and just watching more and more of his work, and I had a similar experience where I saw him as well in the foyer, and I also had I remember someone telling me, go talk to him. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll go. Hi. And then he said hello, and then he left, and I was like, okay, never mind. But always being a fan, always amazed at the work that they put on, so it's been a real treat and a real privilege to learn and be a part of this process.
And I mean, they're known around the world, aren't they, Emma? I mean, the Indian Ink have done so many shows that they sort of kick off here and then tour.
Yeah, and of course our friend Andrew and Sam get to go along with them on to help produce and do the technical stuff. But, I mean, I just know how much opportunities Indian Ink give for students in the sense of their education programs have always been so strong as well. And it's quite often one that gets written about for good old NCA external exams and everything, because they have such good technical elements, the use of costume, the use of masks, the use of live music, all of that allows for such good writing.
Definitely.
And this one's touring, so Whangarei, Hamilton, Tauranga, Auckland. How do you think the audiences might change or react as you travel around? Are you expecting some differences?
We were talking about this the other day, actually. Definitely. That's the beauty of theatre sometimes, and the beauty of a live audience is everyone changes. And one audience might laugh at one kind of joke, and another audience might not, and one audience might get that, and one audience... So you're not... that's going to be the fun part, I think, for me, is the different experiences that we're going to share with an audience as well.
And you're not playing in small theatres. I mean, like, Clarence Street in Hamilton, Baycorp in Tauranga. They're not small, like, intimate little 100-seat theatres or anything. You know, they seat 300-odd people.
I think it's going to be interesting to see kind of what parts of the story resonate with different people in different areas. And also, like, I don't know, people's proximity to theatre in different cities. I know, like, Auckland, we, like, have a few here with Q and The Basement. So there's an audience that's kind of, that's familiar with theatre and are, you know, regulars.
Yeah.
And so I wonder about, like, a crowd in Whangarei, like, what's their relationship with theatre and what kind of shows are they watching and what resonates with them. But at the same time, I'm interested to see what kind of is the universality of all of us.
Totally. And I've, you know, seen and done a few things in Whangarei and always been impressed, actually, by the Northland audience. There's something quite, they really do kind of hang off every word that you say and things. I've always enjoyed them as an audience, but I've walked away going, so why is that different to, say, Auckland? Is it because is their day a little bit more relaxed that they've gone home and freshened up before racing in the theatre at night? You know, it'd be interesting. Well, what do you think are the key takeaways from the story itself?
Well, our kind of overarching question of this whole kind of play is, would you open your door to a stranger? We open with that question, really, at the start of the play. And so I guess at the end of it, and with the story we tell, I guess we want the audience to have a bit more clarity and introspection about, you know, because with this story, bringing it and rooting it in 21st century Auckland, we are trying to be a mirror to the people in the audience, or like the modern audience. And so we go, especially now with, like, you know, people and immigration and this idea of the othering, like, it is like a opportunity to, like, introspect and, like, have a look at our empathy. I think that's kind of the question we are asking.
So you're the stranger at the door?
I'm the stranger at the door.
So tell us a little bit more about your character. What have you learned about this person?
I think what I've learned is just how different he isn't, actually. We're all trying to fit in and find connection with someone else, especially if you're say someone new walking into the room, you're always trying to find someone to connect to, and how sometimes you can just be shunned for being different. So it's been really, yeah, it's been fun getting to know that person, and getting to know that character. And I think throughout our rehearsal and our time and having time spent with him, I feel less and less sympathy for him, and I feel more of a, I'm more backing him to win. He's not the underdog anymore.
Nice.
I think he's the superhero.
Nice. All right, let's take a short music break, and then after the break, we're going to unpack your journey in the arts. You've already given us a hint of some of the training, and find out also where you'd like to head next. Now, as it's New Zealand Music Month, we're playing some of the old classics tonight, so here's a little bit of Dave Dobbin with "You Ought to Be in Love." While that plays out, a little bit of trivia for you. What was the famous Kiwi film?
Foot Rot Flat.
Oh, Damn, I thought I'd beat her on that one.
No, because I remember too. Do you remember the fun park that used to be out west? The
yes, because you used to drive the little cars around.
And
I
you got a driver's license.
Yes.
Yes.
And they had the stop signs and the railway crossings.
Oh, and I remember going around the roundabout the wrong way.
I know. Yes. These two are so young, they've got no idea what we're talking about. But
how to be a part of it.
Yeah, I know. So
it was Teatatu Peninsula, which is now where all the sort of horses live, and there's a bit of development just on the right by the motorway. And it was one of the coolest, forget Rainbow's End, this was a cool fun park.
Yeah, it
had rides, it had activities, but one of the best things is you had these fake little cars that you got a license for, and you had real roads you drove on. So as like a 10-year-old, you're driving with stop signs, traffic lights. Oh, it was so much fun. I don't know what, I mean, it just suddenly vanished, didn't it?
I just remember it was a thing when we came up for holidays with our grandparents to Auckland, because I'm a South Islander, and it was Rainbow's End one holiday, and then the next holiday would be Footrot Flats, and we used to always be like, no, we want to go to Footrot Flats to get the next stage of our driver's license.
Lack of income. Mm. Meant the power was turned off. It was opened in 1982 as Leisureland.
And then became
Footrot Flats. That's right. Yeah. Oh, we're showing our age tonight. All right.
I know.
Back to these young things in the room. So, Alicia, tell us, you know, you mentioned drama school and that this is your first debut for Indian Ink or your first debut as a professional actor or both?
As a professional actor.
Cool. So you got inspired at school by seeing some theatre. Did you do any theatre stuff at school yourself?
Yeah, so at school I did drama classes, part of NCA, and I did the whole kind of analyse a live performance for it. But truly, I mean, in school it really wasn't a pathway I was thinking about seriously.
Right.
It was more of a subject or a class that I just could relax and just take a breather amongst all the sciences and the maths and all of the above. I was doing drama just as like, just as a means to relax. And then it was in the last year of high school that my drama teacher was like, hey, you should just like audition for drama school. And I was like, now why would I do that? I'm going to become a lawyer. And then she was like, hey, they're coming to Hamilton. And it was the first and last year that drama school did auditions in Hamilton at the Meteor. So yeah, I did, and I guess the rest was history.
That's cool. And did your family support this, or were they down the lawyer path and they're still sort of rocking in their seats going, she's been doing this for 2 years and I haven't seen her on stage yet?
You know, I have to say I am very lucky to have parents who are 100% behind me.
Nice.
In fact, I was the one that was like, are you sure I should be doing this? Maybe I should become a lawyer. And they were like, no, you gotta follow your dreams. You gotta chase what you want. And I think at the heart of it, my mum and dad are quite creative people too, so it totally like stirred in them as well.
Nice.
So yeah.
So what's next on the horizon once this tour ends?
Oh, so I actually live in Melbourne, so
okay.
I'll be back in Melbourne, and I am venturing into filmmaking.
Nice.
So I'm like, trying to make my own films and put together a little crew and cast in Melbourne, kind of stretch my legs into that industry.
So when did you graduate drama school?
I graduated in 2023.
Okay.
Yeah. So
cool. So how long have you been in Melbourne?
I moved in April of 2024.
Okay.
And
so
then
you've been coming back and forth with Indian Ink?
Yeah, I've been traveling back and forth, which has been nice because, being exposed to a bigger kind of city has been really lovely, but then it just kind of highlights why home is so special as well. You know, there's nothing quite like it when you are back.
And what is the attraction for Melbourne?
It's like a melting pot of like different cultures and arts. Like there's this like palpable energy that's like everyone's like wants to do something. There's like this hopeful energy there that is really contagious. So and it's got a thriving art scene and great food.
yeah. That's cool. All right. So Jay, take us back. When did it kick off for you? Was it at school?
I've always done drama growing up, community theatre and that sort of thing. I did drama classes outside of school. I did the Trinity speech and drama exams and all of that sort of thing. So I was well doing that. Did it throughout high school as well. And then same sort of thing where my drama teacher kind of stopped and said, if I told you you couldn't act or do drama tomorrow, how would you feel? And I was like, I'd feel pretty stink. So then I said that's when I'm going to audition for drama school, and let's see what happens. Mm. I'm a firm believer in whatever happens, happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd also gotten in to AUT for computer science.
Okay.
At the same time. But I was like, you know what, I'm still going to wait and see if drama school, if I get in or not. And I got in, and yeah, the rest is history.
Bye-bye computer science.
Bye-bye. And I wasn't even good at it. So I don't know how I got in, but there we go. So
that's cool. And is this your first sort of professional foray, or have you done other things?
I've done other things as well. I've worked with Silo Theatre Company. I've worked with Agaram Pictures as well. Pop-Up Globe as well. I've done a couple of stints with them. So I've done quite a few things since coming out. I graduated in 2020. As I was leaving the door, Alicia was coming into the
room. Right, okay.
Jay was actually at my auditions. I remember him like facilitating the screen auditions at Twin. That's and then right. After that, I was like, oh, I know this face.
So that was quite special, actually. Yeah, true. That's the first time we met. True, fair. Because as well, you don't see a lot of South Asian faces going for it. So as soon as you see one, it's like, aha! So yeah, true, nice. Yeah.
And where are you sort of seeing the future then? You've had a bit of a mix there, and where you've performed, what's sort of the long-term goal? If we got you back in 5 years' time, where will you be?
That's such a... I have to know, oh my God. Keep doing this. I love it. I love every part of it. Even if it's slow, even if it's going fast, even if it's going well, I love every part of it. So if I'm still doing theatre with friends, if I'm making theatre with friends, if I'm making film, if I'm doing things on screen, I'll be a happy chappy.
So if young people are listening who are thinking of auditioning for Toi Whakaari or any performing arts place, New Zealand, Australia, wherever, A, what advice do you have for them? But B, you know, what about that fear, anxiety, perhaps from their parents, not from them themselves, around making a living of this? Like, how are you surviving in the down times? Is there any tips and tricks? That was a big question. Yeah. So pick any part of that.
Well, I would say kind of if you're young, and this is something my mum and dad told me when we were kind of having this chat when I was at that crossroads, and they were like, you have time on your side, you know, you can do this right now. You can do 3 years of drama school, see how you like it, and you can totally pivot after that. Like, you're not stuck in one thing. And that was really, that was like, oh yeah, that's so true. So I would say go for it, because at the end of it, if it's not the thing, at least you had a great experience.
Yeah.
You would have made amazing friends.
You're adding some amazing life skills.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of applicable to any kind of career, like the confidence and the, you know, all of that stuff that you get given.
I love that, though, because so many parents, it's almost the other way around, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Go and get your fullback degree.
Yeah.
And then if you still want to act, you can maybe do that later.
Yeah.
But I think doing the acting first is great.
Okay. Any other add-ons there? Or how are you making, I guess, making ends meet in the gaps?
Mm. I'd say, similar to Alicia, just go for it. And there are different avenues to being an artist or towards that industry, especially if things may be slow. You can go out and make things. You can grab friends. There's other collaborators that you can use. I've got a friend who has his own production company, Rocket Park Productions, and their whole kind of thesis or like ethos is, if you've got something, a short film, something you want to do, let's just do it. We don't need any fancy equipment. We don't need this. We don't need that. We just need a couple of friends. Hey, Leash, can you come for 2 hours and help out with sound on Saturday? Boom, let's just go do it. So that would be my kind of thing, is there's so many different avenues, and I think sometimes we get fixed on, you know, like that story with Orlando Bloom. He landed, I think, Legolas in Lord of the Rings before he was even out of drama school. You know, that's, I think, the kind of thing is, oh, I'm going to become a big star straight away. And it might happen. Great. But also, it's okay if it doesn't. And there are other avenues and other pathways to get there. And in the meantime, there's all sorts of things you can do. Don't be afraid to get a part-time job if you have to.
Yeah.
I have a part-time job. I work in retail. You do as
I
well.
I do too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that sort of thing.
But like another part of that kind of part-time job is what I found was that have a job that kind of make space for your acting. Like, it shouldn't kind of trump the acting. Like, it should, you should have the flexible hours so you can, like, put in an audition, or you can, you know, get to casting or whatever. So yeah, have that job, but yeah, don't let it override the thing.
100%.
Yeah.
So if a producer walked in the door right now and said, hey, I need you for this particular role or type of show or whatever, what would be the thing you'd drop everything for and walk out the door? Is there a dream role you've always wanted to play, or a type of show, or a film project? What's that one thing that a producer would say that you'd go, I'm out of there, I'm leaving Melbourne, I'm packing my bags?
Next James Bond for Jay.
Is it? Yeah, I could do James Bond. He'd just be a little bit shorter and chubbier, but 100% it could happen. Oh, that's such a good question. I think it's... I don't know. It'd probably be more so people that I'd want to work with.
Yeah?
More so, like, different kind of actors and actresses that would be great, you know, because you can learn from them and everything. So that would be pretty cool. If I could do a movie with sort of Meryl Streep and Shah Rukh Khan as well, that would be, like, the greatest collab ever.
What a film.
That would be what a film that would be. Maybe it'd be the people that I'd be working with.
Okay, all right. Alicia, what about you?
Oh, I think for me, it's going to have to be The White Lotus.
Obsessed with
that show. I just love the satire and the kind of punching up.
Yeah.
It's great. Like, I'm like, and it's a great, like, ensemble cast, and they travel to cool places. I'm like, that's the dream, to be acting and doing that. So, yeah, White Lotus, season 5.
Have you watched White Lotus?
No.
Oh, highly recommend.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
All right, pop it on the list.
Yes.
All right, heading back now to your show, Balloon Dog. If for anyone that's just tuned in, give us that synopsis again.
Yep, so Balloon Dog is essentially asking the question, would you open your door to a stranger? It is a story about parenthood. We are all parents in this story, and it is about how kind of we're all trying our best with the circumstances we have. We're all just trying to thrive and survive, and we're just kind of asking people to have a mirror and introspect and tap into their empathy, I guess. Yeah. But the kind of synopsis is that we have a lonely migrant worker who moves to New Zealand and befriends the 5-year-old daughter. And the family kind of unravels from there, and they just have to face their prejudice.
And Jay, if Emma and I rock on up and hide our little secret kick-ass microphone in the foyer, what do you hope people are saying when they leave the show?
Those two are just absolutely incredible. No, those three, I should say. I think any conversation is a good conversation. As long as Alicia was saying, confronting their own prejudices as well, and talking about these sort of ongoing issues in the world as well, especially with sort of the hardships that migrants face as well when they come in, and sometimes how they are exploited, talking about parenthood and that sort of thing as well, for sure. And then hopefully as well, maybe just a little bit of like, wow, they were really good. That would also be nice.
Now, I see on the website it heads to Sydney and Wollongong. Are you doing that tour as well?
Yes, we are.
Fantastic.
Exciting.
So, so from Whangarei to Sydney, you're getting a real mix of audience. Yeah, so cool. All right, so you're playing in Whangarei on the 16th and 17th of May, Hamilton the 21st and 22nd, then heading to Tauranga for the 28th and 29th, before doing a season at the Q Theatre from the 3rd to the 20th of Auckland, then packing your bags and your might need your corkscrew hats for Wollongong and heading off to Sydney. Performing at the Sydney Opera House, I mean, jealous. What?
Cool. Insane.
And then rapping at the Bruce Garden Theatre in Wollongong. Where can people head for more information?
If people want to get tickets for any of those venues, they can get to indianeng.co.nz, and we've got tickets listed under each of the venues.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming tonight. It sounds really exciting. Be really interesting to hear at the end of the journey what your experiences was. We'd love you to come back and talk to us about what was your experience like with all the different venues and places that you performed in.
We'd love to.
Definitely.
No. I'll be curious to see which one becomes your favourite.
Yeah.
All the best. Head to indianinc.co.nz for all the details. Now, keeping our Kiwi theme on, here is a Kiwi classic, but with a very modern twist, because Stan Walker's taken it on, and it's Don't Dream It's Over.
The damage in a paper cup. And there's a battle ahead. Many battles are lost, but you never see the end of the road while you're traveling with me.
Don't Dream It's Over, continuing our New Zealand Music Month time.
We're going to be able to play a lot of New Zealand music over the next few weeks, though.
I know.
It's going to be great.
It's really cool. Hey, and we often play Lisa Crawley, and she's coming back in June for some concerts, so we'll give you some deets on those next week.
Fantastic.
Really cool.
And if you've got New Zealand music that you want us to be playing,
yeah,
don't forget to send it in to us, because we love playing new artists.
Absolutely. Email us info@kickarts.org.nz. Now we're tracking over now to the New Zealand International Comedy Festival, and we're about
Best Foods Mayo. Is it your favourite mayo?
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is, definitely.
We'll have to check whether it's our guest's favourite mayo. I wonder if you get given free mayo when you're in the comedy festival.
Maybe that's how they're paid. Paid in mayonnaise.
Oh, imagine.
Wouldn't that be awkward? Well, a big welcome to Henry Chung and Sophie Stone. Henry's here with Big Rice Energy, and Sophie's here with Wins Princess. Welcome to Kick Arts, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
It's great to have you here, so please tell us you're not paid in mayo.
It's one of our payments.
It's one of your payments. Yes. Definitely get a box full.
First installment.
Yeah.
Is it like in the green room on the bench waiting for you, like with something to dip in it when you're having a break?
So. Everything. So the whole venue is decked out with mayo.
Okay.
So you get a barrel full of mayo. Yeah. You just grab as much as you want. Like when I say you can grab as much as you want, I mean it.
And it's sounding a bit sticky. Like it's kind of like, you know.
Oh, is mayo sticky?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't used to
wrestle with
mayo. Yeah.
I'd be worried if the mayo was sticky. It might mean it's off.
Oh, my goodness. We've taken the show to a new level. All right, Sophie, you're going to kick it off. Wins Princess. What's this show all about? What can our audiences expect?
Oh, it is broadly about failure.
Right.
Being my own.
Okay.
So, Wins Princess, it's kind of like someone who has very high expectations that are not meeting reality at all.
Okay.
But in a fun way, in a less depressing way, as that sounds.
Ooh.
So, is it a... it's part of the comedy festival, so does that mean it's a comedy one-act play, or is it more like stand-up comedy, or
it's
how
stand-up.
Is it done?
It's definitely stand-up. It's sort of got like a narrative feel to it, just because it's about me in 2024 up until today kind of thing. So there is that kind of narrative, but it is very much comedy, stand-up comedy with a bit of crowd work in there too.
Oh, crowd work.
Ooh. Gentle crowd work.
Gentle.
I like
gentle.
That you say that, because some people do get a bit scared when they think they're going to have to be kind of...
Well, especially comedy, you're always nervous, aren't you? Like, you know, as comedians, do you always pick on the people in the front, or do you sometimes go, I can see you at the back and I know why you're sitting there, so I'm going to talk to you?
I think it's a vibe thing.
Okay.
Like, sometimes people sit at the front because they're wanting to interact with you, but sometimes people sit there and it's obvious they haven't thought it through. And when you mention crowd work, you can see they're starting to panic. So I think it's a vibe it out. There's always people who obviously want attention, and then there are the people who clearly do not want to be interacted with. And generally, I leave them alone.
Nice. You almost need, I remember back in the day, Spookers used to have a kids' version of Spookers for 13 and under, and they would give you a glow stick if you didn't want the actors to come near you. Maybe as people come into your show, you should give them like a glow stick, and if they don't want to be spoken to, they can kind of be like...
True.
What do you do if the whole show's glowing?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
What do you do when someone's over-enthusiastic as a comedian that's almost getting to the point that it's spoiling your set because they're just wanting to over-engage?
Aww.
Like they've had way too much to drink.
Yeah, it depends. Like some people heckle, but they think they're helping. Like they're just a bit drunk and enthusiastic, and you can kind of like nicely shut them down.
Mm.
If someone... I don't want to swear on air. If someone is being, you know...
Yeah, you can't really say shut that up.
Yeah, if someone is being a bit beyond that, that's when you have to be a little bit meaner. But that's actually not that common.
You could throw rice at them, couldn't you?
I could. I'd do them anyway, whether they're nice or not.
Oh, you just throw rice?
Yeah, that's my shtick.
Oh, okay, cool.
Rice sticking to mayonnaise.
Yeah.
You know, if I go to this show, I'm definitely not wearing my best dress.
No.
Yeah, my thing is the rice is cooked, though.
Okay.
It's hot.
It's very sticky with mayonnaise. All right, okay, so we've got Wins Princess sort of outlining her last few years through a bit of a stand-up theme. What is Big Rice Energy doing?
Big Rice Energy is... I'm going to be honest, man. I just want to put a show together to have people laugh.
Yeah.
It's really just, you know, how I perceive my own experience, my journey here, coming to New Zealand. I'm not born in New Zealand. Just my worldview and things about me.
Okay. Can I ask where you were born? Because your accent's got a tinge of Americanism.
I'm a bit of everything. Yeah. I was born in Hong Kong.
Right.
And I was there till I was 13, and then I actually came to New Zealand for a little pit stop for about 4 years, graduated high school, went to the States, and then after like a decade, I said, I want to come back. And here I am.
Isn't it amazing how that accent, though, has stuck from the States far more than I would say Hong Kong or New Zealand?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't even pick it out. I honestly don't even pick out people from Seattle. If I meet Americans here, it will take me about, like, 2 days to realize, like, wait a minute. He's not saying certain words the way that I would expect him to, you know? Mm. So,
that's brilliant.
So, why is rice giving you energy?
Why is the show name Big Rice Energy?
Yeah, why is rice the energy maker?
Well,
not laughter.
You know, the Big Rice Energy is really a play on big energy. But if I, you know, obviously, if I had a big, then I would be using the big energy.
Gotcha.
So Big Rice Energy it is.
Okay.
Because that's what I have.
Cool. Gotcha.
All right. So what can we ask, you know, what are some of the stories you might talk or things you might talk about in your show?
Yeah. So, you know, family, you know, I have a child. My family lives here. Growing up in New Zealand, a lot of observational, you know, differences between my background, which is Chinese, and how Kiwis or even Americans will do things. Some political things. What else I got?
What was your most surprising difference, I guess, New Zealand, Hong Kong versus the States?
Most surprising. I don't think I'm surprised anymore, but I would say the biggest stark difference is honestly how we, like, family. Family dynamics is very different. Mm-hmm. You know, how mom and dad will interact with us, certain cultural expectations. Like, for example, like, taking your shoes off, it's the most basic. And coming here, and I see people wear shoes in the house, at first you're like, what is going on? Why are they wearing shoes in the house? And then, you know, you just kind of come to terms with it.
Okay. Shoes.
Mm-hmm. No? You say, okay, this is obviously...
No, I agree. Because, but then it's interesting because, see, for me, shoes off at the door is a New Zealand thing, but it's into bare feet, whereas my experience Asian countries is it's shoes off at the store, but then you put on your slippers.
Oh, yeah. You got inside shoes and you got outside shoes.
Yeah.
And I think of growing up, a lot of the homes, certainly mine, were wooden floors and things. So you often keep shoes on because they're freaking cold. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Imogen, is New Zealand home for you? Where did I get Imogen from? Sophie, is New Zealand home for you?
I'll take Imogen at this point. I'll take anyone else. pretty much. I grew up in Auckland, originally from the UK, but pretty young when I moved. So, yeah. Auckland most of my life, for sure. Do take my shoes off at the door. Thank you, Henry. Just to put that out there. Don't want to get cancelled.
I respect you.
And when you talk about, you know, some of the struggles you've had over the last couple of years, what's the big standout one that you've tried to overcome the most?
Oh, it's kind of an ongoing struggle. It's kind of, the whole show is kind of about delusion. So it was like, being at a point in life where you're like unemployed, have too much time on your hands, but I also had the strange feeling that I was going to become rich and successful, despite that not obviously not happening. So I was doing silly things like buying lotto tickets and like planning to become a famous YouTuber. And so it's just like this crazy kind of mismatched sense of reality that I think a lot of comedians have because we're all a little bit delusional. So, yeah, it's kind of talking about that over time and I guess what it means to be quote-unquote successful and thinking like having a job is going to solve all your problems. Spoiler alert, it doesn't. Yeah.
We just had Indian Ink Theatre Company on in the first half of the show and, you know, talking about a process of how they've spent 2 years devising the show that they're about to launch and everyone involved. As comedians, how do you devise your material? And is it something that you kind of write, put away, come back to? Or, you know, is what you're doing now got bits of content from other shows? How do you create your performance?
For me, it's really think of it the best of. in the last 4.5 years of me beginning to do comedy.
Yep.
Obviously, some are topical and they kind of phase out after it becomes just stale. But honestly, because the show is about me, and a lot of the material and the content is really just a continuation of who I am as a person, starting from when I first came here, you know, like going through the New Zealand school system, big shock to my, just like how I understand the world, and then to, you know, in the States, coming here, getting married, having a child. It's like, so all of that is always going to be relevant. So how I put it together was just finding, materials and jokes that to me is the most true to my character, but also like how I would things that I would just like to share with the audience.
Okay. What about you?
I've only been doing comedy for 2.5 years, so it's a mix of best of, but then also kind of because there's a theme to the show, there's stuff I've written more recently for it specifically. I had just kind of the idea for the show about 1.5 years ago, and then applying to be in the fest, I pitched the show not thinking I would get in, like, so it was fully throwaway. I was like, oh, this is a silly idea based off an idea I had, you know, 1 year ago, Wins Princess, wrote a little bio, and then they said I had 1-hour show, and I was like, oh, no. I've had to write some new stuff, but then there's also some older stuff that's come in as well, so it's a bit more of a mix for me, I think.
I suppose it's the thing with festivals, though, isn't it? Because you don't want to put your heart and soul into it and create a whole piece to then have it turned down. It's kind of quite nice to, I think it's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
My brain goes, yay, I've got it, now I've got to work really hard.
I definitely didn't have 1-hour show when I applied, and I really, thought they were going to turn it down. So I was almost like a bit bolder in what I said I would do, just assuming it wasn't going to go ahead, and then I was like, okay, now I have to match this, and that's fine, and I'm just, it's going to be a bit of work, but
Who do you try your content on? Like, you obviously try it on people before you put it in front of an audience?
Yeah. So, you know, we dwell in the underbelly of comedy at the open mics.
Yeah.
You know, try it on the poor 5, 6, 7, 8 people that show up, and then you work your way up, you know, you say, you first try out, it's like, is there even something there? Or sometimes you just have a gut feel and you're like, this is hilarious and it's going to work, and you go to the club, you go to the Classic Comedy Club, shout out to these guys for putting me on. It's just anywhere you can get you in front of a microphone and some people.
Does your child think you're funny?
My child thinks I'm hilarious, but none of my jokes are working on him.
When you write from the heart and from your own sort of stories and experience, do you involve other people in your stories? Like, you're telling stories about people that you've engaged with, etc. How do you find that balance to never sort of come home and have the door slammed in your face, or your neighbour go, I'm not talking to you because you just talked about me on your show? Like, how do you do it so you don't offend people, but you actually want to draw so much from the people you're meeting?
I just don't have any friends or family anymore. I feel like, I guess you kind of know theoretically, if you're saying something that's crossing a line. I think probably my, like, most quote-unquote, like, offensive jokes about other people are either someone I don't speak to anymore, or, like, not because of the joke, like, way in the past, or it'll be, like, a combination of people. It won't be, like, based necessarily on, you know, Jane next door. It might be, like, neighbor I had 10 years ago versus a neighbor I had 2 years ago, and it's kind of like a culmination.
Morphed them into a character.
Okay,
is that the same for you, Henry?
I don't really have, like, strong rules, but I guess the rule of thumb for me is it's got to be funnier than it is offensive.
Okay.
Because you can do topics that are offensive.
Mm.
I think you should. But if only if you can make it funnier, then it is offensive.
Yeah.
How does it work? Because I'm assuming that because you're talking about differences in cultures and countries, it's kind of, how do you make it not stereotypical so people are laughing? Like, do you get what I mean?
Like, yeah, so I guess like stereotype, a lot of it is rooted in some truth, right? So I think you have to understand like what is the stereotype and how did it come about? And if you can make a joke that is funny about the stereotype, I think you just gotta go for it. And again, like, that line is so blurred, man. Like, you know, maybe to an audience is funny, and then to the wrong people is very offensive. So it's really for you to figure out where is that line and where can you dance around that line.
And I suppose if people know that it's, I mean, they're coming for comedy. It's kind of like people going to the Book of Mormon as Mormons.
Yeah.
You know, realizing it's a musical that's parodying. That's the word. There you go.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah. I remember Book of Mormon taking my kids and the person behind at interval getting up and saying, "I hope you're ashamed." I said, "Why?" He said, "Bringing your kids to something like this." It's like, no, this is exposure. It's life. It's humor. It's comedy.
It's a pretty good kid show.
It is. Yeah. Anyway, time for a music break. Continuing our New Zealand Music Month theme, and then I'm going to find out where our comedians, when and where and how they first started in the comedy world. Emma, here's your next quiz question.
Oh, okay. I'm ready.
Okay. If I say cigars and the month of April.
Oh, my God.
What might...
April Sun in Cuba.
You got it. Dragon. Another one that you don't always realize is a good Kiwi song till you hear it.
Thank you.
April sun. We're saying goodbye to the April sun, well and truly, at the moment. Although it's been beautiful, beautiful weather here in Auckland. Just definitely got cooler, and a reminder that winter's coming.
It sure is, and it's the darkness at night time.
Yeah, yeah. Sophie, let's start with you. What made you first go, I want to venture into this comic space?
It's funny. I never really wanted to be a stand-up comedian. Like, growing up, I loved comedy, but my idea of, like, a dream job as a kid was to work on, like, behind-the-scenes comedy TV show or something like that.
Okay.
Was it
Friends?
No, not... God, no. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. No, but I really loved comedy, but I didn't want to... I was never that into stand-up. And I think it's just that stand-up is, like, one of the easiest and most accessible ways to get into comedy. So during COVID, I remember I saw this ad come up, and it was for, like, New Zealand Comedy School.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this, like, short course teaching you, like, how to get into it, common mistakes, do's and don'ts, and all of that. And the first session was free. It was over Zoom. So I went to that. And I was like, I want to sign up for the rest, but I don't feel ready. Like, I'm not brave enough kind of thing. I'll do it a bit later. And then, like, 2 years later, finally, I ended up doing it when it was in person and signed up for the full course and then kind of never looked back, really. Yeah.
That's cool. We've had a few people come on here that have talked about that school. What was I guess, the structure or the learning that really worked for you with that?
The nice thing about it, I guess, is that it was a small group. It was like 10 people, and it was a mixture of, like, how to write jokes and things like that, but it was also getting you a little bit of stage experience with performing in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like you'd initially just, you know, try a couple jokes in front of just that group, which was really good at sort of, like, building your confidence. And then at the end, after a couple weeks of these, like, weekend courses, you had, like, a friends and family show, basically, where it was mostly people's friends and family who came to watch at the Classic. And so that was kind of everybody's debut performance in front of a large group of people. And yeah, I think it's really good at just kind of building that confidence to get to that step. I don't know if I would have had the balls to, like, go to a random open mic, you know, on a Friday night in a bar and just get on stage and start telling jokes. I really needed that, like, little structured, gentle introduction for me anyway. Yeah.
And do you think it works better to have some sort of theme, or, you know, some comedians can just stand up and talk about absolutely anything and it can go anywhere? Or is it easier to have a bit of a structure and go, okay, now I'm at least going to loosely link it back to something? Does that help you in your writing?
For me, I mean, I do a lot of free writing, or at least if I'm being disciplined, which I never am anymore, I'll do a lot of free writing. So, like, every day I'll just write kind of stream of consciousness writing for, like, 10 minutes straight. And then I'll come back to it maybe in a couple of days and see, was there anything in that that was funny at all, or has the potential to be funny? So the jokes could be very random. They're not necessarily based on a theme, unless I'm doing something like for the show where it was obviously more themed, or if it's a particular day that I'm on performance, like if it's, say, St. Patrick's Day or something I might try and think of a joke about it on the day. Yeah. But yeah, generally it's a little bit more random.
Okay. Henry, take us back. When did you first sort of kick into comedy?
Oh, man. I want to say it was either early in the year, end of the year. It was, like, you know, just around summertime.
Last year?
No. 4 or 5 years ago. I just remember, this is before my child was born. I just remember I took a break from corporate, tried to start a business, failed miserably, and had to go back to corporate. And I was just like, man, I need something to do. And I went to a random open mic. I did write for that whole week like a maniac because I knew I was going to do it. But I jumped on an open mic with Brendan Lovegrove. And the rest was history. I still got the first set on recording. Horrific.
Okay. You're not using any of that material. Hasn't made it to the Rice show.
There's actually some stuff in there I could rewrite, but I would not say them as is.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, what was your question again?
What first made you go, though, I want to do something like this?
I think I really needed I need an outlet. I need to do something. And I was just struggling to find, like, you know, what do I want to spend my time doing? And I think comedy was one of those where I could get to express myself with people. And it wasn't music because I don't know how to play music. Right? I don't have any other arts skills, but I can talk. So I said, I want to try this. And I got on stage, told a few jokes, maybe not so funny, but people laughed. And that moment, I clicked, man. It's just like, it's so good. It just feels so good. It's like instant gratification.
Thanks, you know? Girl. What do you guys do when a joke bombs? Do you then go, right, I just never do it again? Or do you come back and go, I believe in it, I want to rewrite it, or, yeah.
I think it depends on the bomb. Sometimes a joke bombs so hard that it's kind of funny. Like, there's this kind of funniness in it. And I guess it just depends on, like, was it the joke missed the mark? Like, was it a slightly touchy subject? Was it just not funny? Probably. Or sometimes it's like, it's usually, if a joke bombs, it's an issue with the setup.
Right.
Or often it'll be there's something that's just like, you assume is really clear because you've it's from your own brain and you think it's really obvious, but it's just not to the audience. And yeah, it's always fun bombing. I mean, I've never done it, but of course.
I think bombing is the essence of stand-up comedy, because without knowing what fails, like, you would never have a funny joke. Mm. So I actually think it's one of the best things to do is just learn how to bomb. And what do you do when you bomb? Do you watch your recording and try to find out, was it you or was it the audience or was it something that you said?
Do you acknowledge the audience at the time when it bombs? Do you go, you know, okay, that one fell, or, you know?
Yeah, you can do that. You do that. Here's my general take is, if you can just acknowledge that it bombs and it sucked and just be a little bit more lighthearted, and instead of just kind of dwelling on it, because people pick it up, man.
Mm.
They see you and they're like, oh, he's having a hard time not doing that joke well. But, or you can just be like, ah, well, you know what? That was messed up.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Everyone has fun. Mm.
Do you ever adjust a joke when you're live on stage and you kind of look and read your audience, or perhaps the place or venue that you're in, or the time of day? Are you ever mid-joke going, oh, I need to be adjusting this on the fly because I'm not getting the feedback that I want from the audience?
For me, I feel like there's a few jokes I keep in my pocket just in case, right, if I just can't get a read on what these people like. Sometimes people like really clean stuff.
Yeah.
Very conservative. Sometimes they're like, man, they find the drier, cleaner stuff really stupid, and you gotta lean harder than the other way.
Hmm.
So as you have more jokes, you just kind of build a repertoire of, you know?
Does it also depend on the time of the day, though? Because, like, you've got a 6:30 show, you've got an 8 o'clock show.
Yeah.
So, like, if a crowd maybe, because they might go to the 6:30 show and then come to you, so they've already maybe been warmed up, or maybe, you know, had a few drinks.
Drinks will change things, yeah. But I think it's more the room. When you say time of the day, I think daylight. Because I've done shows in the daytime before, and it's horrific.
It is.
Oh, yeah, I can't imagine doing stand-up during the day.
It feels like a prank.
Yeah.
It's a prank on us, is what it is.
But is that like sometimes, you know, I go to a lot of conferences for my work, and I always admire the MCs, who are often well-known comedians that have been asked to MC something at 8:30 on a Monday morning and keep going till 4 in the afternoon. You know, that's tough. That's a tough crowd. So, I mean, that's definitely that daytime, you know, adjustment needed. Although, I guess in that sense, do you at least have some material because you can theme it based on the room?
Yeah, I do feel like definitely the room and kind of almost the demographics. Like, there are jokes I'll do, for younger audiences and jokes I'll maybe do for older audiences. Not all of them, but just certain jokes that I know don't always work as well. I'm trying to think of an example. I did this joke once, and I've changed the punchline since, but I had a punchline where it was referencing shell shock. And I noticed, like, everyone above the age of, like, say, 35 loved it. Mm. Everyone under were, like, not thinking, I don't know. I mean, I know what shell shock is, and I'm 27, but still, it was just, like, it was interesting to see that generational gap. Yeah. So, yeah, it can depend on things like that, I think.
Are you using AI at all yet? Are you running your jokes past AI to see if you can make AI laugh? Or are you using it to help get you some more material or tweaks?
I'm getting all the help I can, man.
Yeah.
I played around with it. Mostly, it's, I would say it's like, it's good, but you got to pick and choose. You got to really cherry pick the content in there. Because I'll ask something like, hey, this joke really worked. Give me some more angles. Give me some more things that are relevant. Yeah, yeah. It's like, hey, what are the topics relevant to like a Chinese restaurant? And then it would just go on and just list like 15, 20.
And then something in there gives you the inspiration
to write.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you have a good prompt,
yeah,
you can now pick out a few things. I've got a few jokes out of it where I can stitch it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good for tags, I would say.
Okay.
Tag. So you have a joke that works, and you have a tag that kind of just extends it.
Okay.
Just keeps it going and going and going around like a similar premise, but a different punchline.
Brilliant. Sophie's going, oh, okay, I'm going to go home and just run my script and
I
a
might
little
be funny
bit
now.
ChatGPT and see what comes out.
No, I don't know. I use chat in other areas of my life. This is like the one thing I use my brain for, barely. I've got to keep part of my brain working. I'm not touching it. It's, yeah. Oh, that's interesting, though.
Who's inspired you both? Are there specific comedians either here in New Zealand or around the world or on media, YouTube, those sort of things? Who are the comedians that you go, that one's someone that sort of inspired you, you look up to? Maybe there's a difference there, inspired versus look up to.
Sophie Stone. No, I'm just joking. Can you imagine?
The mirror. You should have said Imogen Stone. That would have got it going, yeah.
Like, growing up, I liked a lot of British comedians, and I liked a lot of kind of absurd British comedians. Like, I really liked shows like The Mighty Boosh, so I liked people like Noel Fielding, Julian Barrett, Richard Ayoade as well. Those kind of awkward or weird characters, probably because I'm autistic. Now, it's weird. I'm not... This is so strange. I'm not that into stand-up comedy, like, just generally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really weird because, obviously, doing stand-up, people ask you, like, oh, what comedians are you watching? What stand-up are you into? And it's like, ah, like, the people I see at the open mics I go to, they're cool. Yeah, I know, Henry, it's shocking. I'm, like, the worst person to ask. You should answer this question, Henry, actually.
You're like, well, I grew up watching Chinese comedy, so probably no one we know here. No, but I really started watching stand-up when I was in America. Mm. And it started with Dave Chappelle, because it was just like, he was at the height of popularity. So I watched Killing Me Softly like probably 100 times by now.
Mm.
It was one of the specials. It was just really good. And then I started getting into more. So I would say for me, growing up was predominantly black comedy that got me into the genre.
Mm.
How I really motivate me to get started was during COVID. I watched this guy on Netflix. I'm not going to say his name. I watched this guy on Netflix. He was like doing at a big theater in UK. And I was just like, oh, what's this all about? Clicked into him, watched him. And I just thought like, man, that was not funny at all. And I thought to myself, this is my delusional self. Like, if this guy can do it, I can do it. That got
Netflix
me
Netflix during
motivated.
COVID, was it?
That got me motivated.
Somebody that begins with R and middle with second name G?
Oh, no.
It wasn't her?
All right. Okay. All right. Who's that?
Curious. Okay, interesting. Do you find, what are the biggest differences between comedy in, say, China, States, and here? Are there what are the tweaks that you have to make?
Oh, I mean, context for one. Like, I've done shows to, like a very immigrant-heavy Chinese audience. My stuff just wouldn't work because they have no context of,
right.
like, some cultural things. Like, I had a joke about Jeffrey Dahmer, and they're like, who?
Right, right.
So, you know. Chinese comedy has a lot of puns in them, and that's just kind of like... I don't even know that Chinese comedy that much, but English, I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't touch puns.
Okay.
Maybe for corporate, I would, but, you know.
Brilliant. All right, we're going to take a short music break. Then after the break, the two of them are going to have to duel for your attention to buy tickets for their show. So here is another oldie but goodie. It's Zed with Glorophilia. Philia.
She keeps me waiting in the morning, tying ribbons in her hair. And come the evening, there's no warning why I'm not to know why she isn't there. No time to tell her all the reasons why I always disappear. Situations, I just fade away. Still, she never cares. But Glorophilia says, she says it's just another Sunday afternoon. Glorophilia says, she says there ain't no point in loving you. Glorophilia says, she says, it's just another Sunday afternoon. Glorophilia says, she says, there ain't no one in loving you. No, I can't sleep at night. I'm sure that things just ain't right. Glorophilia says, she says, it's just another Sunday afternoon. Glorophilia says, she says, there ain't no point in loving you. Glorophilia says, she says, it's just another Sunday afternoon.
Good classic Kiwi music. It's part of New Zealand Music Month. Songs that you could easily remember the choruses to.
Yeah, it always makes a difference when you remember, you know.
Yeah.
You're humming it afterwards. It means it's a goodie.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, time now, listeners, get your pen and paper out to find out exactly when these shows are taking place. Sophie, you can kick it off. Wins Princess, you get, let's be kind, you get a minute, plug your show, talk about it. Give the show details, times, and information, and no pressure.
Just come, because you'll like it. Trust me. That's it. No. Okay, it is at Q Theatre. It is the 21st and 22nd of May at 8 p.m. You can get tickets on the Q Theatre website and also the New Zealand International Comedy Festival website. Wins Princess, if you've ever been...
a sold-out show. Did you know that?
The Friday has sold out. That's awesome. Which is very nice.
Yay.
Yeah, I don't know. If you are someone who enjoys comedy, particularly comedy that kind of revels in failure and all of that, you will probably like it. There's a bit of dark stuff in there. I'm a bit of a dark gal. There's a bit of jokes there about neurodiversity. Also teaching, because I'm a teacher now, if things couldn't have gotten worse. Mm-hmm. So, come along if you think you'll enjoy it, and thanks for listening.
Brilliant. Grab your tickets on Thursday the 21st, so you better get in and book that. Okay. Over to you, sir. Kick it off, your minute promo.
All right. I'm doing a show from the 19th, 20th, and 23rd of May. That's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday at 6:30 at Q Theater. Why you should come? Because it's going to be an awesome show, and if you have a immigrant Asian girlfriend, she probably won't find anyone else funny. So bring your in-laws, bring her friends. They will understand my show just fine. But again, like, it's really just for me putting out a representation of like Asians that are also funny. We don't have to stick with a certain fit in the, within the certain box, and I think that my comedy kind of helps kind of break those boundaries a little bit. And it's just going to be a good show.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Head to comedyfestival.co.nz. And as we said at the start, it's the Best Foods 2026 New Zealand International Comedy Festival. Thank you so much to both of you for coming along tonight and giving up your Sunday night to chat with us.
Thanks, guys. It was awesome.
Awesome to have you here. Emma, we are out of time. I've got Adam's Family opening this week, so if you want a good family entertainment, head along to the Playhouse Theatre and come and enjoy that. Have you got anything much on this week?
Coming to Adam's Family opening night.
Awesome. Good answer. We have played New Zealand music all night and lots of old classics, but to finish, our dear friends Borderline, who are just doing such an amazing job at the moment, they've released their official video for That Girl, so let's close the show with that. Have a fabulous week, and make sure you
kick some arts. Girl.
teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Good night. If you